Okay, so I'm talking today about a network assessment tool called AVA, and it's evolutionary because that's the basic algorithm behind its analysis. So let's talk about, we're going to go through an introduction, what does AVA solve, talk about the model that AVA uses, and show some experimental results for our departmental instructional laboratory. All right, so the main problem that we were tackling with AVA was that vulnerability scanners are limited. They're on a per machine basis. They don't really show you the composition of attacks across machines. For example, what I like to call a foothold situation. If an attacker, this is pulling up the wrong slides. I'm sorry, I just realized that. Let me restart this. There we go. All right. So the problem is that we can't see composition across machines. We can see each individual machine, what vulnerabilities are on those machines, but we can't see how they interact. So let's say that an attacker gets into your web server. What can they get to now that they have compromised your web server? What if you have a private communication channel to a database server? They can't get to the database server from the internet, but once they're on the web server, they now have access to that private communication channel, and they can exploit that to now get to your database server. This is what I like to call a foothold situation, where an attacker has to compromise one machine before he has to compromise another. He can't just get to everything from his starting position. So we have these scenarios developing where he has to go compromise one machine, compromise another machine, compromise another machine. And AVA is designed to help us seek out these scenarios. So what we develop with AVA, the basis of AVA is something called an attack graph, where we visually see all of these foothold situations. So on this attack graph here, we can see that the attacker starts on his machine, which is the orange oval there. He executes 4 attacks, and as the result of those 4 attacks, he gets root privileges on 2 servers. Now, in this case, he can access these servers directly, so it's just one stage, execute the 4 attacks, get root on the 2 servers. But in more complex scenarios, he'd have to compromise, let's say, server 1, and then from server 1, maybe he can get into server 2. Maybe he compromises a laptop and uses the laptop as an infection vector. And AVA uses these attack graphs to visualize these paths. However, visualization is not sufficient. We get into situations where the visualization is too complex. So what we do is we have evolutionary analysis of these attack graphs. And the benefits of doing this analysis is that we can break down what is visually complex into a more human-readable, human-digestible format, so we can develop these reports for certain situations. So what AVA supports for analysis, find a set of hardening measures. For example, what patches do I need to apply to prevent the attacker from getting root on server 1 and server 2? Or could I add some firewall rules that would prevent the attacker from using his foothold situation to get any farther into the network? Maybe I can't prevent him, but can I detect him by putting down IDS sensors? So that's what it can do in terms of hardening measures. We can also perform what-if scenarios. So we don't know if we have a certain vulnerability, but we're concerned that maybe we have a browser vulnerability. Let's assume we have a browser vulnerability. What happens as a result of that? We can also assist with network design. You have a prototype network. You want to see what sort of risk this prototype network has and perhaps how to redesign your router rules or your firewall rules to make this network more resistant to attack. Some of the more interesting features that we're working on with AVA is to guide forensic evaluation. So you know your network has been compromised, but you're not quite sure how far your network has been compromised. You input all the evidence you have currently, and Ava can help highlight other resources the attacker could have gotten from the resources you know they have. Likewise, detecting these attacks in progress is part of an intrusion detection system. We see that the attacker has compromised a certain resource. Where could he go from here? Can I stop him from getting there before he actually gets there? All right, so behind this we have the attack graph, and basically this is a representation of our network. The initial nodes in the graph represent what your network looks like right now. So your vulnerabilities, your firewall rules, your router rules, IDS sensor placements, that's your initial nodes. What am I at this moment? Then the interior and terminal nodes represent what Ava has detected the attacker can do from that initial state. So what attacks can be executed, what abilities can the attacker gain from these initial conditions. The edges, I actually visually represent them as diamond nodes because it looks nicer, but the edges are the actual attacks that Ava has detected have been executed. And then we have basically a sequence of exploit paths, which are steps from your initial nodes, so your current state, to some bad state, so for example, getting root on a server. And what we do is we have basically attack templates that specify certain types of attacks, what are required for the attack to execute, and what happens as a consequence of the attack. And we develop these paths by just chaining together multiple exploit templates. So here's an example of a couple of exploit templates. SSH attack, we need to have a vulnerable SSH server running on the target. The attacker needs to have a source machine where he has at least user-level privileges so that he can run the SSH attack tool. He doesn't have root on the target machine yet because, you know, if he's already got root, why run the attack again? And that the source machine can connect to the target machine on port 22. And as a consequence of the attacker gets root on the target machine. Likewise, an IIS template, very similar. Big difference here is that the target has an IIS vulnerability and it can connect on port 80. When we were first working on this, it became quickly apparent that a lot of attacks had overlays like this where they just varied by one or two conditions. So we made abstract templates. So abstract the SSH and IIS attacks into a remote to root attack. And so the target has a remote to root vulnerability and we have a remote to root port that the source can reach the target on. The advantage of doing these abstract classes, if you get a new exploit coming around and it fits into one of your abstract classes, you just have to add it to your mapping. This vulnerability is a remote to root vulnerability, and then Ava will handle it automatically. You don't have to code any new rules in for new attacks unless they're so new that they aren't currently in the model. And the current model models privilege escalation, so remote to root, remote to user, user to root, and so forth. Password guessing and password cracking, that's also in the current model. Information leaks, such as port scans of your network. And also router vulnerabilities, so can they log into your router and change the firewall rules on you? Or can they crash your router, can they crash your firewall? So that's what we currently model. We don't model everything. For example, we don't model denial of service attacks. This initially started off as focusing on privilege escalation. So that was the goal of our modeling. All right, we generate these graphs basically by getting data about the network. So we get a list of vulnerabilities on all the machines. This can be gathered with a vulnerability scanner. Such as Nessus, that's the vulnerability scanner we use currently. It can also be gathered by just proposing what if we have a certain vulnerability. We also have to have a model of the firewall rules and router rules. Currently, we have to do that by hand. That's the tedious part of the input. We're working on automatically extracting these rules because it does get very tedious to do all these by hand. You also have to have an attacker model, so who are you concerned about? Are you concerned about an outsider, someone who has no privileges inside your network? Are you concerned about an insider, perhaps someone who has user-level privileges on your network? So what sort of starting location does the attacker have? Currently, we only have one attacker in the model, so you can model an insider and an outsider, but they're both assumed to be the same person. You can't have two antagonists in the model right now. All right, then we take all that input data, we do a little pre-processing, we convert all of the vulnerabilities and port numbers to our abstract model. So port, you know, they have an SSH vulnerability and you can connect on port 22, then we mark that down as having a remote to root vulnerability and you can connect on port remote to root. Then we also cluster identical machines. If you have 50 machines that are all identical, they have the same vulnerabilities, they have the same connectivity. There's no point in modeling all 50 of them in the attack graph because you're just going to be duplicating tasks over and over again. So we reduce those down to a meta machine, which is basically a cluster of two machines, so we can see interactions between the machine and then interactions from everyone else to the cluster. And the advantage of doing this clustering is it greatly increases the scalability. Attack graphs are limited by the number of machines you model. And the more machines you try to model, the more unwieldy this process becomes. It either chews up CPU time, chews up memory, or does both, depending upon the size of the network. What we use to generate the attack graph is an expert system. Currently, we're using Java Expert System Shell, or JESS for short, but any expert system that has the ability to model preconditions that imply consequences could be used for this system. All right, then we get our output. We have the visualized graph, and then we also have a data file that represents this visualized graph. Obviously, the analysis portion works off the data file. The humans use the visualized file. Now, visual complexity can rise pretty quickly. That's why we have the two modes of output. This is a attack graph for a network with just 15 hosts. And you can see it's pretty dense. It's very hard to see what's going on. So that's why we have the analyzer. And what we use for analysis is an evolutionary method. We use a genetic algorithm to search our solution space. And the goal is basically to prevent the attacker from reaching certain resources. And the administrator can set what resources those are. So you can say prevent getting root on all machines, prevent getting user on the database server, whatever you want to model as a bad resource that you don't want the attacker to get, you can mark that as a goal node. And the reason why we had to use evolutionary methods for analyzing the attack graph is simply that it's computationally infeasible to brute force the analysis. There's been several works, not only by myself, but by others, who've shown that this is not something that could be brute forced. You have to use an approximation method. And the advantage of using a genetic algorithm is that you can do a guided search. You start with random solutions, and you apply a fitness metric to select what you like out of those random selections. And so you can guide the search to find solutions that are tailored for your needs. Okay, so for example, if we wanted to find a set of patches, we initially start with just random set of patches. Pick them randomly out of the set of all possible patches. Then you apply them to the graph and you see how it affects the graph. You then apply a fitness metric based off of how well it disconnects the attacker from the resources you don't want them to achieve and how much this patch set would cost. And then you select the solutions with the best fitness, you breed them to get another generation, and you just keep repeating this however many times you want to repeat it. And then AVA stores the universal set of best solutions across all generations. So at the very end, when it exits, it's got a set of best solutions that it presents as a report. Now, assessing the fitness is the most CPU-intensive task. When we first did this as a single-threaded program, almost 60% of the time was just spent assessing fitness. So we converted this to a multi-threaded program so that we could take advantage of the new multi-core CPUs. What it does is each thread is given its own copy of the attack graph, because our theory is, you know, memory is now cheap, but time is not. So take advantage of all those cores. And this is how the fitness is assessed. Here's our starting graph. We've got root on two servers. And first it will patch one vulnerability. And as a result of patching the vulnerability, it disables the edges going out of that vulnerability. that then disables these two attacks because they no longer have one of their preconditions. So you can't achieve that attack anymore. And then that then disables root on server one because that was the only way to get root on server one. All the attacks that led to that goal no longer exist. That also disables getting root on server two via server one because he no longer has server one to use as a foothold. And so that's the consequence of patching server one. Patching server one, we've now disabled all of this of the network. Then if we go on and we patch server two, we repeat the process, we disable that attack, and we finally end up with a secured network. And this is what I like to call a cascade process. It does this all the time. And that's why it takes so long to go through all this. All right, this is all affected by the mode of analysis and the policy. Basically, the mode sets up our default costs and our default benefits, and the policy can override this, either globally or per specific machines or specific patches. All right, I'm going to really quickly run through the modes. We find a set of hardening measures. That's your classic, what patches am I going to apply? The more interesting thing is to do strategic planning. So what could happen in certain situations? What if I have a browser vulnerability? What if I have a zero-day attack? And when you do strategic planning, you just generate a new graph and run it through all the other analysis. Network design in simple mode, you could just give it a bunch of networks and see how they compare. How far can the attacker get with all my different prototype designs? But it's not very interesting, it's just strategic planning. What's more interesting is to do evolutionary mode. And in evolutionary mode, it actually tries to find new network designs. It changes the connectivity rules and it places sensors to find a better design. And in all these modes, it outputs a bunch of different solutions so the administrator can choose what they like best. And then finally, forensics evaluation and IDS alert. As I mentioned earlier, we matched the evidence to the graph to see where they could get to. We're still working on getting this fully developed. Part of our problem is getting the appropriate input data for these modes. Okay, so experimental results. We had this instructional network where we have a server DMZ with five servers and then four instructional labs behind a NAT. And we basically looked at the base configuration, which is the graphs I've been showing you, and we did several scenarios. What happens if a student visits a malicious website? What happens if a student is malicious and wants to try to compromise the network? And what happens if someone brings in a compromised laptop? Now, we already showed the base configuration. This is my little example I've been using all morning. So in base configuration, we could compromise the two servers, and that kind of surprised our system administrator. He immediately agreed with the suggestion to patch those two servers, and as soon as I handed him the report, he was over doing that. In our first scenario, if we have a vulnerable browser, they can use the browser to then get user-level privileges on all the lab machines. And then by getting user-level privileges on the lab machine, they're able to exploit some user-to-root privilege escalations that existed and then get root on the lab machines. And so the patch suggested here was to patch those privilege escalations and also to patch the vulnerable browser. That way, he would no longer be able to do that. In the malicious student scenario, the big problem we have here is we have to allow them to get user privileges. That's the purpose of this lab. The students log in as a user. They're allowed to be users. So from their user accounts, they could then use privilege escalations to get root. So the suggested patches there were to patch those privilege escalations. We still allow them to get user because we have to, but we prevent them from escalating from user to root. Finally, in a rogue laptop situation, the suggestion here, there was actually two suggestions. The first was, again, to patch the privilege escalations, but allow the laptop to log in as users to all the machines because it's an open access lab. The second recommendation was to actually change the network design. And in this case, we changed the network design to no longer allow the laptop ports to connect to anything else in the lab, to make each laptop port an isolated channel to the internet, but not to the rest of our lab resources. And this was using the network design analysis mode, not the patch analysis mode. We also did scalability testing. We tested up to a network with 2,500 machines. Took an hour and a half to go through the whole process from generating the attack graph to analyzing the attack graph for that network with 2,500 machines. The smaller networks took under a second to analyze, and the time was just based on how big the network was. What we just have to work on right now is do some more automation, get rid of these by-hand processes, allow multiple attackers in the attacker model, and fully implement the IDS mode because, we're, like I said, we have some data issues going on there. Also, this is currently right now a bunch of little shell scripts and Perl scripts, so we need a cohesive GUI to tie it all together. So are there any questions?